In today's episode, we will hear from Jenna, a podcaster, mental health advocate, and a passionate leader supporting the military veteran community. Jenna shares some very difficult experiences she went through when she was serving in the United States Navy. She thought the military would offer structure, stability, and security. But she discovered that was not the case. Instead, she dealt with assault, betrayal, and shame. Let's hear more about the street she lived on. You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives. My name is Lena LaRue, a recovering, people-pleasing, overachieving perfectionist with a lot of repressed emotions from my past. I want to invite you on my journey to learning how one can emotionally and physically heal from difficult life experiences. The goal is to first recognize how our past experiences affect every aspect of our lives, our health, relationships, self-image, etc. Once we recognize how our past is affecting our lives, we can then decide to break free from its limiting hold it has had on us. We can learn how to break old limiting patterns of thinking and adopt other healing strategies so we can start living a guilt-free, healthy life where we can feel confident and at peace with ourselves and the world around us. If this sounds like exactly what you need, then keep on listening. None of the information you hear is meant to replace professional guidance. This podcast is meant for inspirational purposes only, and you are encouraged to seek out professional advice elsewhere. So when you think back to one of the most, you know, difficult times in your past that you're going to share with us today, how would you describe that time in just 3 to 5 words?
Lonely, confused, shame.
I can definitely relate to feeling all of those emotions at one point or another, and I'm sure some of you listening can too. I asked Jenna to go into more detail about the season in her life when she experienced this loneliness, confusion, and shame.
So I joined the military right at 18, and it was just, you know, it was because I needed more structure in my life. I was someone who put party before everything. I put a good time before everything, and I really needed, I knew if I went to college, I would just be partying. So I was like, I had that foresight. At least I was smart enough to do that. I was like, I need something with structure. I want to be around people that are more healthy. Because even when I joined the military, I was flagged for a vitamin D deficiency and osteoporosis because that's how like undernutrition I was because I was just drinking all the time. I didn't know that what military culture was like, and it just kind of enhanced it. I mean, the military is known for drinking, and I found those people that like to drink instead of, finding the people that wanted those healthy goals. I guess I was just really misconstrued on what the military was like.
So Jenna was an 18-year-old high school graduate who liked to party, and she realized that she needed structure in her life and thought the military would be a great opportunity to bring positive change. First of all, I gotta hand it to her on that one. I know that at 18, all I wanted to do was go out with friends, spend money, and be young and unrestrained. I think it's great that she had the foresight to know that she needed structure in her life at such a young age. I can also see how she thought that joining the military would be a great opportunity to make positive change. Because of that, I was actually surprised when she told me the military is known for parties and drinking. As a civilian, I had a lot of questions about this, since I assumed you had to live a really strict lifestyle in the military. I asked Jenna to further explain what it was like during her time in the service.
So when you're not deployed or you are not in training, there's a lot of downtime and there's a lot of time to, you know, you don't have a lot of money when you first join. You're usually living on base in close quarters. So there's a lot of other people in your age group around and not everyone has cars. I didn't have a car at first. So it's not like you can go and explore whatever area you're in. So really you're kind of confined to the barracks, and that is where a lot of the drinking goes on, and it's really easy access, and alcohol is even cheaper on base, so it really does promote a lot of drinking.
What in the world? Alcohol is cheaper on the military base? That doesn't seem like a smart idea.
So when you first show up at your new command, you don't know anyone and you're really isolated because sometimes you show up with other people, sometimes it's just you and everyone in your command, you're just not sure what it's like. There was no girls, there's no other women my age. So I felt so alone and I had an ID that looked like I was older. So I would abuse that and I would just drink by myself because I was so bored or I didn't know what to do. There was a few people that would, you know, take you under your wing, but so many people were also just living off base. So it was kind of just me in the barracks and I'm like, all right, I guess I'll drink, which drinking by yourself is definitely a red flag. Like, yeah, you have a problem forming. But I'd like to back it up a little bit to what kind of happened, why I think I was drinking a lot. And that was when I was in my training school and I was, you know, I would hang out with anyone trying to make friends. I trusted way too many people and I just wanted to party. I just wanted to be a part of it. And you really have this sense of like, we're all brothers and sisters. We're all taking care of each other. So that's kind of where the trust comes from. We're all looking out for each other because we're all in the same boat. And, you know, you can end up in some situations where people will take advantage of that. And that's what happened to me.
Trusting too many people and then getting taken advantage of. I have been there before. Thinking someone has your best interest, and then you come to find out they didn't care about you. Jenna told me about a specific situation that left me in tears. A situation where a so-called friend not only didn't have her back, but truly took advantage of her. I'm giving you a forewarning that what you will hear next may be a little graphic, and it may be difficult to listen to, especially if you are uncomfortable with topics that relate to physical abuse. If you rather skip this part, I suggest skipping the next 60 seconds.
I thought I was with people that cared about me. I had drank way too much and they said, all right, you're fine. Just go sleep in my room. You know, nobody's going to bother you. You can't have any more to drink. And later on, I woke up and my friend who I thought I could trust was on top of me, like telling me to be quiet, saying, you know, it's okay, this will feel good. And I'm glad I got out of the fog. But he had already, you know, like touched me, like my pants weren't on, but I got out of the fog and I said, no, I started screaming and I just ran out in the hallway. Cause I was in a barracks where I didn't even know where I was. And I was just kind of crying and wandering around and asking people for help. And that night my phone broke too. So I was, you know, like when I was trying to leave and get help, I just ended up staying in someone else. Like I didn't even know who they were. I was just staying in their room, just waiting for me to be sober enough to drive because my car was there. It was just another party down the hall. And I just kind of sat with them. I remember just sitting on their floor, like nobody touched me. I don't want to talk to anyone.
When Jenna opened up about this, I was honestly shocked and I started crying. This is the kind of thing you hear about happening in dorm rooms at college parties. But the military? I just couldn't believe it, and I can only imagine how scared she must have felt in that moment. Jenna told me about what went through her mind after that situation and how it affected her.
But I had a boyfriend at the time and I didn't want him to know. And I was also a virgin at the time, so I had so much shame around this. It was kind of like, you know, why did you let that happen? It was kind of like that. Like I thought the blame was on me. I should have never put myself in that situation. And now I really have the hindsight where I'm like, okay, no, this person was being shitty. It's not my fault. I should have been safe. I went to bed on my own. You know, you should never wake up with that. And I actually, that happened to me when I was even younger, like in high school. So it was kind of just like re-traumatizing me about all of that. And it was just kind of validating my own thoughts of like, you're a bad person. Like, it's me, it's my fault. Like, I don't, yeah, it was just kind of, and I was so young. And when you're so young, you don't put all that together. You just have the feeling and you just want it to go away, which led to more drinking instead of processing it. This pattern with drinking, it just continued.
I just want to say something for anyone who's listening who may feel the urge to judge Jenna for the fact that she continued drinking. Drinking, like other patterns of dealing with trauma, is a coping strategy. I talked about coping strategies in the previous episode, episode number 5, in my conversation with Becky. To give a quick summary here, a coping strategy is an action, series of actions, or a thought process used in meeting a stressful or unpleasant situation. It can be difficult to handle the feelings Jenna had after her traumatic experiences, especially feelings of guilt and shame. She didn't have someone there to help her through this time, to show her that she didn't need to feel guilty. So drinking became her coping strategy to deal with the emotions. Speaking of not having help during this time, I asked her if she ever reported what happened that night and if she ever saw her abuser again.
So like I said, my phone broke and I'm sure he had been calling me and texting me, and it broke for like a week because I think this is back in the day where you could just buy a phone off eBay. So I was waiting for it to ship in, and then I put my my SIM card in or whatever. So during that time, he actually called like my command and asked for me. So there's a front desk. It's called a quarter deck. He actually called to ask for me. And I think he was just kind of making sure I wasn't telling on him or reporting it. And he called me and reassured me it was a one-time thing. He was so sorry. And I really just kind of fawned. And I was like, it's okay. Like, we all mess up, you know? And he reassured me again. And I think I actually even hung out with him again after that. And you know, it's crazy to me that I did that. But I was just so like, it's that fawning reaction. Like, there's, you fight, flight, or you fawn. And that's exactly what I did. And so years later, I am pregnant. I'm in a happy relationship. It was the day I got engaged, the day my husband proposed to me. We all went out to celebrate, and there's a bunch of people there. And it's a small community of like military people. It's so much smaller than you think it would be. And he was there with all of his friends, and he came up and congratulated me on my baby and like touched me on the shoulder, and I just went cold. I didn't want to tell my husband who that was because I knew he would have caused a scene. He would have punched him right in the face. So I held all of it in. The next day I was hospitalized because I had a kidney stone. I think just that stress internalized and my body was just like, this is too much. And yeah, the next day they had a baby shower for me because I was engaged and pregnant. And I was in the ER full of medication. And I went to the baby shower that I don't remember. I was opening presents and I had just so many like pain medicine in my system.
When Jenna told me about how she saw her abuser at the same place she was having her engagement party, I started to get goosebumps on my body. Not only was she celebrating her engagement, but her pregnancy. And this guy, who already crossed the limit with her in the past, had the nerve to go up to her, congratulate her, and touch her arm? If you are a woman listening to this, I know you understand all the feelings and thoughts Jenna must have experienced right in that moment. Feeling like your boundaries are being crossed, your territory is being invaded, a predator is encroaching upon your offspring, even though her baby wasn't born yet, still, we women already have that instinct to protect our young, starting from the womb. Unfortunately, I'm sad to say that this wasn't the last time Jenna would be affected by this person. The next part you will hear is another quite sensitive part of the episode. If you don't want to hear it, make sure to skip the next 30 seconds.
But yes, it gets even worse because a year later, my friend called me And she's someone, I warned all my friends about this person, and nobody really took me seriously because he was such a charismatic person. And so they would all still hang out with him, which, you know, like is betrayal on another level. And she called me about a year later and she said that he raped her. And so I felt so much anger at my younger self for not reporting. And I don't feel like that now because I know that you can't blame anyone who didn't report. It takes people years to come out about it. You know, that feeling's always with me. Like, what if I would have reported? And what if that would have stopped him? You know, what if that would have been something? Like, I know it's not the right mindset to have, but it's still a thought.
Jenna and I were both tearing up during our conversation for what she endured and for what her friend endured at the hands of the same person. This guy who apologized to Jenna in the past, who promised it was a one-time mistake, then went on to take full advantage of someone else who was not able to get away like Jenna did. She and I talked about how complicated a situation like this can be, feeling guilt for not reporting the attack the first time, but also realizing it wasn't her fault that this happened to her friend either. Unfortunately, sometimes things like this do happen, and no matter how much we try to rationalize or make sense of it, we just can't.
I've tried making sense of it, and I'm really at peace with all of this now. Because, yeah, it's been a while. I've had time to reflect on it, and, you know, it's just part of my story.
Thank you for being willing to share all this, because this is hard stuff to talk about.
Thank you for giving me a space, because honestly, this makes me feel so powerful. This makes me feel so heard, and this makes me so happy that he is so scared of me because I've made an online presence, and he's so afraid to go any further in his career because he knows I'm just waiting for my story to get louder. That's what gives me all the power back, Lena, is this.
Good. Well, I'm glad that, and I hope he and I hope other people hear this. And it's crazy to me how like of a common thing this can be, because like I've had so many friends and acquaintances and coworkers over the years and just women that I've talked to that have opened up to me and told me things that I'm just like, what the heck? Like, it's just, it makes me so sad and so angry. And this is not me trying to defend sick actions, but it makes me think like, what did that person, what did they go through to make them do this sick shit to me or to someone else, right? Again, not justifying them, but it's like, where is this trauma? Mm-hmm. Where is this domino effect coming from? Like, I feel like I've gotten to that point where I've gotten more angry at the generational trauma aspect of this stuff. Cause I'm like, you are the reason that this person did this shit to me. But then that person is the reason that that person did that shit to you. I'm not saying that they should have continued doing it, right? Because like we all have that willpower to stop. But it's like, more, this stuff needs to be spoken about more, because maybe other things can be prevented. So maybe like less monsters will be created. I don't know if this makes sense. And I don't want you to feel I'm invalidating you by what I'm saying, because I'm not. It's just, it's like, shit. Can people stop the cycle? And so thank you for being here and talking about this, because obviously, and I know the stuff that you do online to help people and to spread, you know, like about mental health awareness. Thank God that you are not continuing a cycle where you are going to go and then hurt someone else, right? Mm-hmm. You've been hurt, you've been taken advantage of, but you're not going to go and then take advantage of other people. So thank you.
Right.
And sorry about my rant.
And no, because I remember I listened to the episode where you're talking about your grandma and, you know, even what she would do and how it started just way before you. And I thought that was so interesting. And it made me want to, like, interview my parents because, you know, they won't open up, really. They want to remember the good because their parents have gone and they're like, I want to honor them. I feel bad bringing it up. But anyhow, Yeah, and the cycle continues. And I like also how you mentioned about your mom teaching you, because that's what I'm trying to teach my girls. I have three little girls that I'm sending out in this world one day, and it scares the shit out of me. You know, how are they going to, like, I don't want them to be naive, because there's 40 years between me and my parents, and I was an only child, and my dad worked night shift. So it was really just me and my mom a lot. And she's so much older than me. You know, we're very close, but she didn't explain stuff to me. She didn't, and she has been through a lot too, but she didn't want to explain that to me. So that's kind of something I'm changing, being more open with my daughters about stuff like that. And even my husband and I talk about, you know, what's appropriate, what's not, from the time they can talk, because it's so important.
You could obviously hear the passion in my voice when talking to Jenna about breaking the cycles of generational trauma. This is a subject I'm really interested in and want to dig deeper into it. I feel that if we, as a collective, bring more and more awareness to the topic of mental health and healing from trauma, we can possibly slow down the progression of more abuse and acts of violence in the world. I was very pleased to hear how Jenna and her husband are actively communicating with their daughters to warn them about things and prepare them for the future. By doing this, they are intentionally breaking patterns of communication, or lack thereof, that they receive from their parents before them. It makes me so happy to hear when young parents become aware of their own trauma and decide to break generational patterns so the next generation can be prepared, well-informed, and healthier overall. You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives with Lena LaRue. In order to stay accountable to improving your overall well-being, you need systems in place to help you stay focused on your intentions. A simple and affordable system you can implement is tracking your day-to-day habits and actions in a journal. Lucky for you, I have a collection of journals that I have created to help you do just that. My 90-day wellness journals are meant to help you keep track of your day. Each day, you will be able to track the following: your food and supplement intake, your physical activity or self-care practices, your physical symptoms, and your emotions and feelings. You also have a section to set your daily intentions at the beginning of the day, as well as a section at the end of the day to reflect on your challenges and successes and what you are grateful for. These journals are great for those who are keeping track of their mood and emotions, for those who have specific weight goals, for those who are recovering post-surgery or injury, for those who are preparing for an athletic competition, and for anyone who simply just wants to keep track of their overall well-being. You can purchase these journals online at Amazon. I will make sure to put a link in the show notes so you can get one of these journals for yourself or for a loved one. Now, let's get back to the show. Okay, so let's get back to the story. So after that situation, you said that, like, you would drink a lot, like, on your own.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure you were, like, probably very, like, confused and depressed. And
yes. And I just attracted the most, you know, I attracted other people that were like that, that just wanted to drink. So I was kind of in, like, a crew of people that's all we wanted to do on the weekends. And that's all we could really afford to do. And I was in a really bad relationship too. And he had gotten out of the Marines, and he moved up to Norfolk with me. He had so much past trauma. He was very depressed, not the best upbringing. He was taken advantage of by so many older women. But I loved him. I thought I could fix him. I'm going to help him. And he just got really into drugs, and he got into a lot of things behind my back. So at this point, I was going on the ship a lot. Before we go on deployment, we do a lot of workups. So I would be gone for a month, and I would trust him with my car and my apartment, you know, we were sharing. And I came home from an underway one time. My TV, my iPad, a few pieces of furniture, everything was at the pawn shop. And I was like, what happened, you know, and like, where is this money going? And again, me being naive, I was probably 20 or 21 at the time. Whatever he told me, I was like, it's okay. You know, I would come home and there would be his friends there. There would be strangers living in our apartment. And I would find empty bottles of pills. And, you know, I just kept saying, like, okay, you know, like something's not right. But you brush things under the rug. And I also knew I was leaving for deployment. And when I left, I did not leave him an apartment. I had my dad come get my car. I had him move in somewhere else, you know, so I wasn't responsible for him because I think I intuitively knew that it was the end. I just had taken too much from him. And I was probably month two of that deployment, and his landlord was actually on deployment with me. And he said that he's been selling coke out of the house. I'm going to be kicking him out. I was like, that's it. That's it. We're done. So that it was like a nice clean cut, I thought. Because probably like month four of deployment, I get an email from the ship's nurse. She's like, hey, I need you to come see me. It's like, what? So I go down there and she's like, you tested positive for an STD. I was like, I lost my virginity. He was my first boyfriend ever. I was so embarrassed. They treated me like garbage because
The nurses?
the hospital, so there's like a, what do they call it? Like a medical, there's like a medical center kind of in the main part of the ship. And they treated me like I was a whore. They had me sign this log. It was like an STD log. I had to sign it to ensure that I got training. I had to go through some briefing. The guy literally told me, he said, you should start having sex with the lights on. You should always use a condom. Just
Because sex with the lights on is going to help you be able to see.
yes. And so I'm laughing at it now, but I had so much shame. This was the lowest point of my life because before him, I was saving myself for marriage and I just felt like disgusting. I felt like it was living in me. It was something you could get rid of, but I felt so gross and low. I didn't want to tell anyone. Why would you want to tell anyone that? It was, you know, it's disgusting. And you know what? I found out as the deployment goes on, you work so close with people and people know something's wrong with you. So eventually they got me to crack it open and they were like, I've had that five times. Like, they're like, it's not a big deal. And then, you know, like to me, it was because my mind was spinning. I'm like, when did he cheat on me? You know, I was gone so much. Like, it was just that sense of betrayal to me. And I didn't get an answer. He denied it right away. But I told him, I said, hey, go get checked. Because we weren't together anymore. I was just like, hey, go get checked. Because it wasn't from me. You're the only person I've been with in my entire life.
First of all, I just want to say how much I respect Jenna for sharing that information on the podcast. One, because she's being so vulnerable about her past and her challenging experiences. And two, because it gives others the courage to open up. I, for one, feel validated because I too had contracted an STD over 10 years ago. Jenna and I talked off camera about my experience, which I may share about in a future episode. I know that feeling of feeling gross, like she says. On top of that, she also had to deal with betrayal, and probably all those feelings of being taken advantage of came up for her again when she was out on deployment.
But when I came back, you know, I moved into a bachelorette pad with my girls were always over. I had a roommate and, you know, he was into drugs and stuff. So I started getting into like harder drugs and just partying a lot, a lot, a lot. Yeah, and it was time for me to get out of the Navy, so I needed to make some serious decisions. And luckily, my now husband, I met him. And, you know, once we started getting serious, we were getting kind of over that whole party scene. And, but like, we like to drink a lot together too. So it wasn't still not healthy. It actually took me, about a month after I got out, I found out I was pregnant. And that's really what stopped my drinking, was being pregnant.
So that was like a big light bulb moment for you.
Yeah. I was like, I have to be. There's no question about it. I need to find another way to cope. And I did that by isolating myself from everyone. I was in a new state, so I didn't have any friends near me. I shut off all my social media. I would only respond to people that texted me, but I wouldn't reach out. I just said I'm busy with school because I had started school too. So it's just like such a huge transition. I'm now going to be a mom. I was also, you know, dating Nick, dating my husband. I was also becoming a stepmom because he had a child before. And then I was a college student. So it was all hitting me at once. And I would have normally just had a drink or something to cope with all of that, but I couldn't. And I made myself miserable because people make me so happy, Lena. I need to talk with people. And I also had a lot of shame from being pregnant out of marriage. I was raised Catholic, you know, we don't do that. And my parents were not thrilled about it at first. So yeah, I just wanted to hide myself from the world.
She wanted to hide herself from the world. I think that many of us can relate to that feeling, either wanting to hide in isolation or run away, where no one can find us, judge us, or hurt us. Jenna went through a lot by that time in her life. She was still so young, had gone through an assault in the Navy. She was drinking to cope with her pain, experimented with drugs, partied with friends, got cheated on, and contracted an STD. And then she was engaged to get married, was about to become a new mother to her first child, as well as become a stepmom, all in her early 20s. She had a lot going on in her life, and the one thing she used to cope with, alcohol, she could no longer use as her coping strategy. Thankfully, because I have known Jenna for some time now and have had a working relationship with her, I know her story doesn't end there. I asked her what things look like when she finally started taking her healing journey seriously and what it currently looks like now.
I'm still in that process of learning and learning how to cope because I'm not pregnant anymore. I could reach for alcohol. And it took me so long to reach out to get therapy, to actually talk with someone. It took me about 9 years. It wasn't the best experience for me. It taught me a lot. You need to find the right therapist. And also, like I told you, things get worse. Things got way worse for me once I started therapy. It was like opening a box. And I was like, all right, I don't even want to look at this. I just want to put the lid back on. But you can't. Things will get better again.
In order to heal, you do sometimes have to go back into those things. And like you said, it kind of gets harder and worse before it gets better because that's part of the healing. It's like you kind of have to feel that pain. It's like when you cut yourself or you get a scratch, you know, you have the impact of the injury and you think, oh, that's going to be the worst pain. Not necessarily. Sometimes the healing actually, you know, the throbbing, the inflammation, which helps us heal, can be even more painful, but you got to go through that inflammation and that throbbing in order to get you healing, right? So it's like kind of a similar thing. So did you eventually like find the right therapist over time? Like,
that's such a good analogy though. I got to point that out. I love that. I'm in that process. That's what I'm saying. I'm still in that process because when I was going to therapy, I had a very triggering event that happened, which, you know, that wouldn't normally happen. So I need to give it another shot and I feel like I'm finally ready. And I think I'm going to start again. Things get better and my story is still being written.
Her story is still being written. Don't you just love that? I know I do. Why? Because I believe once we intentionally start our healing journeys, that the journey is never over. We're just writing a new chapter, a new page in this lifelong journey of self-awareness, self-discovery, hope, and healing. Something I want to mention is that Jenna is a humble, caring person who not only recognizes the work she wants to keep doing on her journey, but she is also helping others on their journeys. Jenna is a powerful voice in the veteran community and an advocate for mental health, especially for veterans like herself. She wants veterans to know that they are not alone in their struggles, especially when they retire and become a civilian again. She wants them to know that their struggles are normal.
So my story is not unique. I feel like so many people who get out of the military go through that. A lot of them have an issues with alcohol. Not issues, but a bad relationship with alcohol. And a lot of them also isolate themselves, not wanting to reach out for help in fear of, you know, being denied or having, you're so used to having someone control everything. So reaching out for help can sometimes seem pointless. And that's my goal, just to normalize that you're going to go through that phase, but it doesn't have to be as damaging as it sometimes can be.
I then asked Jenna to explain some of the biggest challenges facing the veteran community that she has recognized, especially when it comes to mental well-being.
The most unexpected thing is identity, because you think you know yourself, you've known yourself outside of the uniform, but you don't realize that the person you were before you joined was a teenager, a literal child. And you can't go back to that. That's not really who you are anymore. You have to acknowledge all the changes you went through in uniform and also try to discover who you are without it. I was one of those people. I was like, I know who I am. The military didn't change me. It's not that tied to who I am. But when I got out, I was like, wow, I feel so lost. And I was still living close to a base. My husband was still in. And so I just felt so disconnected from that. Like, I'm not a part of that anymore. It was like very obvious to me. What am I a part of now, if anything? What's my purpose now?
Sure.
You know, how am I spending my free time, even to how I dress? Gosh, I've gone through so many different closets because it was just like all I had in the military was party clothes and then my uniform and nothing in between.
So like you said, like a big like loss of identity, which that could lead to just that alone, having that identity issue. And not even just for people who came out of the military, but just in general, like us humans, that can cause one to have so many different feelings, go down to make so many different decisions.
Yeah, I find a lot of people searching in the wrong areas, or just kind of even like self-loathing, feeling bad. I know I did that. It was just like, I don't belong in this civilian world. I get so many comments like that. Every day people are like, I can't get along with civilians. This world doesn't listen to me. I just want to go back. It's just a misconception. You know, it feels like that anytime you're somewhere that's new or somewhere that's different, but you can find your people. You're never going to find that brotherhood again, but there's still great opportunities out there. And I think that that's another big thing veterans face is just, what do I want to do with my life? It's almost like there's so many opportunities and we don't plan the best when we get out. So there's just so many little things underneath it, like finances, healthcare. But yeah, I think just deciding, picking one thing and just going for it is also very brave and scary.
I like that. Like the way you're saying that, and I see the smile on your face, you're looking at it from a different perspective of, okay, how you said you could be self-loathing. I don't know who I am. I feel alone. No one understands me, but you're taking another perspective of, you know what? The world is my oyster, right? As the saying is, like, there's so many opportunities. I can do anything. Like I can, you know, I can be who I want. I love that. I love changing that, you know, dark, lonely, confused perspective into, hey, there are great options out there. You heard her. She herself experienced an identity crisis and self-loathing, but she is now in a much better place, not only working on her own healing, but now encouraging and supporting others who have had similar experiences. Jenna is the host of a weekly show and podcast called Vet Chats, where she connects with other veterans who are making a difference and finding satisfaction in their civilian lives. She also launched a wonderful tool this year that she has been dreaming about creating for years. She has been receiving such positive feedback from the veteran community and I asked her to go into detail about this tool that she created and how it's helping veterans with their mental well-being.
You recently just published a book, a workbook called The Veteran Workbook. I was wondering if you could kind of talk to, you know, the listeners just very briefly, like what the workbook is intended to do, what are the intentions behind it, and how it can help veterans.
Absolutely. So this workbook would not be here without your host, Lena. I had the idea to do some sort of journal, but Lena really sparked that, reignited that fire to continue writing it, and especially for veterans. And I'm so happy you did that, because it's helped me. And so with the workbook, it's really just a journal tailored for veterans. It has a lot of prompts, because it's intimidating to just grab a blank page and start writing. And also, a lot of veterans aren't ready to talk about things, but maybe they can talk about it with themselves and write out their thoughts. And it's going to ask questions that you probably wouldn't think of, but they're going to seem so relative to you, because it's very universal what everyone goes through when they get out of the military.
Like Jenna mentioned, we actually worked together to get this workbook created and published. I know she said that she was grateful to me that I helped her to self-publish this book, but you know what? I am the one who should be telling her thank you. I felt so honored that she reached out to me and asked me to help and guide her in this important project of hers. Like I've said, I'm a civilian who has a lot of military friends and acquaintances, but there's a lot I still don't understand about the veteran community. After working with people like Jenna and other inspiring veterans, I've become not only enlightened about the military community, but I have recognized the spirit and determination in these people. The spirit and determination to give back to their brothers and sisters, to help uplift one another and support their overall well-being. As we wrapped up our conversation, I wanted to bring everything full circle. Remember how Jenna described this challenging season of life at the beginning of the episode? She used the words lonely, confused, and shame. I wanted to find out how she would describe her life now.
If you had to describe your present life in just 3 to 5 words, what words would you use?
I would use grateful, hopeful, and I would say inspired.
I love especially like the hopeful, right? Because as you said, you're still on your healing journey, just like all of us are. And honestly, something I realize is we ain't ever going to stop healing. Once we start, you know, we're going to make some progress. There's going to be times we might revert back, but we keep moving forward.
I asked Jenna if there is any parting words of wisdom or advice that she wanted to share as our conversation was coming to a close. This is what she said.
I think what you said there, our healing journey does not have a destination. There's no quick fix. It's not something you obtain. It's something you maintain, and something you're always going to have to work towards. So find a way to enjoy it and look forward to it and make it just like a routine part of your life. And don't beat yourself up if you're not meeting all these expectations, and you're going to get off the path of your journey. Don't beat yourself up. That makes it fun. When you look back on it, you're going to be like, I learned so much from veering off the path, but I'm so glad I'm back on. So just honor your own journey.
Who else feels pumped and inspired by what Jenna said? It's not something you obtain. It's something you maintain. That's what our healing journey is about. It's about making incremental progress along the way and not giving up on ourselves, even if we may veer off the path. I met Jenna months ago through a mutual connection we both had with another inspiring veteran. We had an instant connection, and I thought she was such a laid-back, cool person to talk to. When she reached out and asked me to help her publish her dream book, I didn't know just how inspired I would be by her creativity and compassion. I had the idea to invite her on the podcast because I admired her advocacy for mental health, and I saw the impact she was having on others.
I had no idea about the traumatic experiences she went through and found myself inspired by her courage to share her story with me and with you. If you felt inspired and encouraged by Jenna, I urge you to reach out to her. Check out her podcast and her workbook if you or someone you know can benefit from what she has to offer. I'm going to share information on how to reach Jenna and how to check out her resources. While I found myself resonating with Jenna in many ways and feeling encouraged by her spirit, a key takeaway I would like to share is this. Your traumatic experiences can be used for good. Sure, you can decide to let your trauma dictate your life, your actions, your character. You could isolate yourself and think the world doesn't understand you and remain in a place where you shame yourself or shame others. Or you can decide to not allow those experiences leave you bitter or afraid. You can decide to reach out for help. Look for others who have experienced similar challenges. Others who are happy to support you and show you that you aren't alone. The first step to getting there is this, is to search for others who have experienced similar things, who are out there sharing their stories. Are you open to listening to their stories? I know I am. That's why I am here with you today. This is Lena LaRue. I'll see you on the streets. You just listened to an episode of The Streets of Our Lives. This is Lena LaRue, the host and producer. I hope that you were encouraged and inspired by this episode. If you were, please help others find the podcast by subscribing, sharing, or leaving a rating on the show. Please feel free to reach out to me with any comments, questions, or suggestions for upcoming episodes. And if you'd like to monetarily support the show, you can find a link to make a donation in the description of the episode. I really thank you for your support.